Coming up in this episode, we say a fond farewell to a member of the Star Trek family. Star Trek Discovery wins some awards, a lawsuit comes to an end, the Enterprise is about to disappear, and more. This is The Topic is Trek, episode 51, for Friday, October 4th, 2019. This podcast is top grade merchandise. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already. And we're back.
Where did we go?
Well, hello. We were gone for a little while because Dragon Con and such. But anyway, I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And as you can hear, beaming in to join me from somewhere in the Delta Quadrant are Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hello, everybody.
And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I've gone beyond the Great Barrier.
Oh, wow. It's just an illusion, you know, really. So, as I said, we were gone for a while because I don't know about you guys, but I was doing some resting and, well, working on another project as well. Yeah, I wasn't really, but it makes a good story. But we're back from Dragon Con where we had our live show once again this year.
Yay! Yes. Here, well, yeah. We had some cheering once upon a time.
Yay. Yes, and there was rejoicing.
Going so on.
We had a good time with it. We, you know, if you missed it, we played Jeopardy.
We had we had prizes. We had special limited edition stickers.
Yeah, that's right. Two versions of them.
We did. It was so the sticker was a sticker that was black on one side of the sticker and white on the other side. Mm-hmm. Of course, you could also have chosen the one that's white on one side and black on the other side.
Just don't wear it upside down.
Yeah.
There's really a 50-50 chance which one you get.
And lots of Chakotay prayer stones were given out.
And so prayer lotion. And
yes.
Yeah. What else was there? Prayer lotion, prayer.
Anything.
Prayer tissues. I don't know.
Anything with googly eyes stuck to it and a picture of something.
Hey, what's funny is when I got back from Dragon Con back home, we went to the, with my dad, I went to the breakfast one morning and I was walking out, there's a picture of George Washington with the googly eyes on it. And I can't help but think, Chakotay's been here.
Yeah. There was a Dragon Con meme with the FedEx guy with the googly eyes and like the cardboard cutout. What was he? Yes. FedEx Joe or something?
John, yeah.
And he got more and more decorated as the weekend went on.
Yeah, expect that as cosplay next year at Dragon Con.
Oh, that's already a group formed that is going to be doing that. If you were not at Dragon Con to see our live show and all this other bizarreness, then get yourself down to Atlanta next Labor Day weekend when hopefully we'll be doing another live show. We can't guarantee that yet. It's a long time between now and Labor Day weekend.
We couldn't guarantee it 2 weeks before the show. So
yes, it's so
when we got, know, what, you'll 50, know.
We got, so we have 47 weeks left and we'll tell you.
That's right. But with all that in mind, we have a lot to cover in this episode. So I think it's time, Charlie, to open up that subspace chatter.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Some things never change, do they? All right. I'm going to kick things off by turning things over to Craig, who's got a brief thing to mention here.
Yes. And we're sad to note that actor Aaron Eisenberg, who, of course, everybody knows played Nog on Deep Space Nine, passed away on September 22nd. He was 50. And our thoughts and prayers go out to his family. We'll be talking more about him a little bit later in the show. In our main mission section.
Had I been thinking about it, I should have got the bagpipes of Amazing Grace going.
Yeah. Well, please don't try to hum it because that it's not going to work. So, but let's move on to some happier news. And I will turn things over to Chuck to talk about some awards.
Awards. Yes, we have happier news.
We got awards?
No, not this time. We got the best improved podcast award.
Best first 4 minutes ever. Yeah.
Congrats to Star Trek Discovery for winning its first Emmy. Oh yeah. Woo. That's awesome. The show, get this, the show won for outstanding prosthetic makeup for a series, limited series, movie, or special. That's all one category, people, not three different ones. In a category that also included shows like Chernobyl, Fosse/Verdon. I don't even know what that is.
It's a new one on me. Yeah.
American Horror Stories Apocalypse. We've heard of that. And get this, it won out over good old Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Take nice. That.
Oh, by the way, this just in, we got the Good Try Award from the Federation.
Boy, for this. They gave us a black and white sticker.
It's a participation trophy, isn't it? Just know it.
Next year, we're going for the white and black sticker.
Every podcaster got one.
Dream big. Dream big. Discovery also walked away with three Saturn Awards. This series won for, and you talk about your other category, this one for Best Streaming Science Fiction, Action, or Fantasy Series, beating out Black Mirror.
Wow.
The Expanse.
Double wow.
Lost in Space.
Very wow.
Mm-hmm. Good Omens.
Love it. Wow.
Yes.
Russian Doll.
Never seen and it. Wow.
And Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan.
Jeepers creepers.
I know. Sonequa Martin-Green won for Best Actress, and Doug Jones won for Best Supporting Actor in a category that included, among others, fellow Discovery co-stars Wilson Cruz and Ethan Peck.
That's awesome. You know what?
Doug Jones, he does so much good work in that, all that makeup. He deserves whatever award he's nominated for.
Absolutely. And the nice thing about those two categories is they weren't like extended names. It was like Best Supporting Actor and Prosthetic Makeup and a limited run series of the streaming. And it's just Best Supporting Actor. That's fine. We'll just go with that. All right. Let's move on to some real fake sort of news.
From one of our favorite grammatical sites.
Yes.
I know. Yes. And actually, it's funny you say real fake, because this is kind of real fake. I don't know if everybody is. I say a lot of people are familiar with this now. The deep fake videos where they take somebody's face that has a lot of reference images from them from different angles and stuff. And they'll superimpose with AI. They'll superimpose the faces onto video of other actors or characters, or could be even politicians, on a video. And it's very convincing in a lot of ways. Sometimes not so much, but a lot of times it is very convincing. So this one, which we're talking about here, is from Nemesis, which, I'll say this, go watch the video, you're going to see Nemesis in a different light. And I'll read a little bit here. So in the last time Star Trek fans saw Jean-Luc Picard was in the 2002 film Star Trek Nemesis. In that film, Picard encounters Shizan, his clone that the Romulans had bred and had discarded, just like trash, on the planet Remus, where he lived in slavery alongside the Remans. Then in Nemesis, Shizan, played by Tom Hardy, leads the Remans on a coup of the Romulan Senate. Then he lures Picard to Romulus to meet face to face. The YouTube channel Deep Homage imagines what meeting would have been like if Picard Stewart played both roles. And that's what I was talking about, was when you watch this, there were some things I liked about Nemesis, but it wasn't really my favorite, you know, of course. But watching this, I go, I want to see that movie again with this, because, you know, it's kind of dark. Shizan's talking to Picard and everybody and not really showing his face. And then when the reveal in the movie, it's like, okay.
It's like, huh?
Yeah. But then this, you're like, whoa, it's Picard looking back at Picard. So I encourage you go over there and check it out. It's very cool. And it's like the whole scene where they're meeting for the first time. As soon as the lights come on, you'll be like, whoa, you'll be floored. I hope you'll be floored like we were. So
Yeah, the one thing that I wish they'd been able to do, and you know, it's a limitation, I think, of what they're trying to do, is that he's no younger than Jean-Luc, and he's supposed to be younger. So they didn't really. This is the case where these days, I suppose, what you would do is you would have Patrick Stewart do both parts and do that digital de-aging.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Of the character to be, you know, to be the other character. Aside from that, you know, the effect is very good. I think that what threw me is that, well, he should be younger. Being really picky, going, hey, that's a great fake and all, mm-hmm. but you know, make him younger as well. It's like, okay, come on, you know,
more intense, harder.
That's right. Speak faster.
Tighten that skin. But yeah, I'll tell you that. But yeah, I get that criticism. But I don't. Tom Hardy, I think, looked sort of similar. I don't think he looked enough like Patrick Stewart to really pull it off. That's why maybe that's what really drew me out of that movie.
I see what you're saying because yeah, I think we all have that same thought. Is like, well, okay, he's bald and such, and it kind of, but he doesn't really. Look that, I mean, especially with the look on their faces when they first see him,
mm-hmm.
to me is look would be like, look, it's a bald Romulan without the pointy ears. What?
Yeah. Well, that's what you think when you see it with Tom Hardy. But when you see that scene with Patrick Stewart in there, then it's a completely different shock and awe. It's like, oh,
yeah, all their faces, even Data was like, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, go check it out. It's not very long. What was it like 3 minutes, two, 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Right. And you, the first half of it is in the shadows and then you get the reveal at that point, which I think is a good way to do that clip because you, if you've seen Nemesis before, you're waiting for that reveal and the reveal comes up and it's something different than you've seen before.
That's right.
Okay.
So, I want to see the director's cut with that in it, the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Let's go for this.
That wouldn't be too expensive, would it?
Let's get that Blu-ray remaster deep fake of.
Tarantino on it.
Yeah. Paramount's going to spring for that. No problem at all. Okay.
Call it Deep Fake 9.
Ooh, I like it.
I'm in.
Shut up and take Craig's money. But anyway.
I'm in.
All right, we're going to move on to some late-breaking-ish or last-minute news, or if you've listened to this too late, never mind news from Chuck.
We got to work on those segues, Clint.
I don't know how to pitch this one.
I'm disappointed at this news. I am, because I will be in this city for only the second time later in November. So
too late.
Yeah, it's probably going to be like after I retire is when this thing's going to resume. Anyway, Star Trek fans traveling to Washington, D.C. to see the original filming model of the USS Enterprise, better check your calendars. The Enterprise will be removed from display on October 7th. That would be just a few days after we record this.
Yep.
So if you're listening, go now. Go quick, unless it's October 7th and you're too late. But I'm going to be arriving there November 18th. Sorry. It could be as late as 2026. Now, I said as late as 2026 before it returns. So we'll keep you posted if we're still podcasting in 7 years. A piece from StarTrek.com written by Smithsonian's Space History Department curator describes that the model and its exhibit are being removed into storage while the National Air and Space Museum is being renovated. Because of the complex display that both shows off the ship and protects it, it's not easily relocated and will have to remain out of sight until the renovations are complete. Quoting this piece, the logistics of the museum's long renovation project are complex. The museum will never fully close. Instead, sections of the building are being walled off and the artifacts either removed or protected in place. In the meantime, the staff are busily preparing the content, layout, and artifacts for the reimagined galleries. When the entire project is complete, in time for the building's 50th birthday in 2026, the revitalized and transformed building will house new exhibits as well as old favorites. The Enterprise studio model is scheduled to return to its place of honor in the south lobby of the Boeing Milestones of Flight Hall. Once again, Enterprise exhibit on the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. will be removed October 7th and may not return until sometime in 2026. I have an idea as I was reading that.
Why? Right now?
No. You go in with your microphone and say, "Hi, I'm doing a Star Trek podcast," and you get the backstage tour. You just have to wear a hard hat and they'll let you in.
Why don't you call ahead?
Right. You call ahead, kind of like we did with the Hoover Dam or the Star Trek experience.
You know, I bet you could talk to somebody that works there that was in charge of the restoration to begin with.
The one thing you won't get though is, you know, if it's in storage, it's not going to light up.
It was going to be protected in place because it's not that movable. So they're just going to cover it up. But it might be covered up with a big blanket. Not a blanket. That's probably not
a blanket.
Not if you got falling plaster and whatnot.
It says do not touch. It's really secure.
Thanks for coming to DC. Here's our Star Trek exhibit. It's a big box.
Go ahead, Clinton.
Well, I was going to say, and just want to mention in connection with that this notice came out. I believe it's from, didn't identify the Starfleet chapter, but I'm assuming it is a local to Washington, D.C. area. Starfleet chapter, calling all ships an away mission of the fleet. On October 7th, the original model of the TOS Enterprise will be removed from the lobby of the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum as part of the renovation of the museum. The DC away team is organizing a decommissioning ceremony. We will meet on October 6th at 1 p.m. The ceremony will begin at 2 p.m. We are inviting members representing Starfleet ships and away teams in the DC, Virginia, Maryland area to join us. And perhaps the representative ship/away mission will say a few words. Uniforms are optional.
Whoa.
So
did you show up like a
nude?
No, it's not a Betazoid wedding. So it's a, no, it's it, no, this is not, no, this is a decommissioning ceremony.
There's some of those people you do not want to have clothing optional.
No. That includes us. So there you go.
But I was lucky enough to go see it in March, and I was at, you know, it was out there in display. I was ready to go look for it. We walked through the door, and there it's like right there to the right. And I got a lot of pictures. Actually, you know what I'll do is I'll link up the pictures I took. I got some really close up ones of it, and I'll put the link to the photo album in the show notes.
I feel like I was there.
Cool. I've seen it a couple of times. I saw it when it was hanging
over the
top of top is a set of stairs. This was back in 85, I think it was, or
I thought it was a snack bar area or something.
The last time I saw it, it was after the Ed Marecki restoration, which really was way too much. And it was in the glass case, but in the gift shop
under the stairs.
It was just like way in the back someplace. And I thought, this is not right. And then they took it away and they did, you know, did this full restoration and putting the lights and everything back in it. I thought, that's great. The next time I'm going to be there. And now the thing that I note about 2026, not only is it the 50th anniversary of the Air and Space Museum,
it's
also the 60th anniversary of Star Trek. So I imagine a unified Viacom CBS will be pushing, saying, we would like that back in place, please, for the 60th.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully there'd be some muscle behind that as well.
Yeah, I'm looking over my pictures. There's some really good detail in here, and they did a good job restoring it. And I knew that half of it wasn't detailed out because they only shot one side for the show. But it's kind of shocking. It's kind of interesting to see when you finally see it up close and you're like, oh, there's wires just taped to the side. Well, they're more than taped now, but yeah, they're just sitting there.
Breaks the illusion.
Yeah, a little bit. No, that's good though.
That's how it's done.
Yeah.
If it ain't on camera, don't count.
That's true. But it's beautiful. Okay. Beautiful model.
Absolutely. And next up, a couple of stories that we're going to talk about, not talking about. I'm going to turn these over to Craig for the first one-ish, sort of.
All right. So keep in mind that this is total rumor-ish. All right. So we don't know what is actually going to come up out of this or not, but this pertains to Quentin Tarantino wanting to bring back the, of all people, Khan.
Okay.
What? There you go.
You were waiting for him, weren't you?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Was that when I was talking about something I wasn't supposed to, Clinton?
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the rumors. Just going to read the thing up there.
Excuse me.
Well,
he clicked the link and went reading anyway.
No, no. Never mind. Okay. Forget that.
Yeah. Forget what he just said. Actually,
I think it's fair enough to talk about it.
If you were paying attention to that, the rumor is more than that. So that's not the totality of it. We know that Quentin Tarantino is really like Star Trek to the Wrath of Khan anyway. So that part was, if that was the rumor, I wouldn't have any problem talking about that, but
I think so, go ahead. Mad might have something to say to you, Craig.
You are in error.
No, right. Well, anyway, so yeah, keep in mind that it isn't, it is rumors. You can go check out the article. I won't talk about it anymore, Clinton.
It's like Fight Club. Don't talk about it.
Yeah. But go look. There's some interesting detail in there that may or may not come to pass that I'm not sure. Again, it's all very early. So I don't, you know, there's a script, but who knows really what the details are. So some of it I'm like, that'd be interesting to see. Some of it I'm like, I think that's a load of crud. I don't know how that's going to play out. So take it for what it's worth. It's rumor mill. And, you know, go see until, because you never know until we actually are sitting in the seats and the screen's starting to
absolutely
light up with Star Trek. So who knows?
Absolutely. And we're acknowledging that story is out there, but we're going to let you decide whether or not you want to read the story by going over to the show notes for episode 51 over at thetopicistrek.com. And Chuck is going to talk/not talk about another one.
Yeah, there must be something in the air because we have another potential spoiler.
I smell rumors.
Yeah. It's the stench of rumors.
I smell rumor people.
We're just not going to talk about this. This one involves Star Trek Picard. Again, we'll have a link in the show notes for you over at thetopicistrek.com if you want to know. Look for episode 51. And remember, it's just a rumor. We're not talking about Picard.
Let's wrap this up, shall we?
Good idea.
Yes, exactly.
So actually, I've been trying to avoid some. Ever since we got the trailer or the teaser for the season, I've been kind of shying away from reading stuff. After we saw Jerry Ryan, that was a big enough, and then Data. So another, okay, I'm done.
And then Darth Vader stuff. Is Luke's father.
Oh, what? Whoa. Hey, man.
Great.
You're getting back at me because I told them watch. Spoiler alert.
All right. Chuck's having too much with the soundboard tonight. So
absolutely.
I've been kind of avoiding a lot of news about Picard.
Well, a glimpse behind the curtain here about the show. One of the drawbacks for me is I don't necessarily really like to read spoilers for that same reason. But I have to look at all the stories to decide whether or not something we'll be talking about. So yeah. I kind of now get spoiled on everything.
Curses.
Getting ready for the show.
Thanks for taking the bullet, Clinton.
You're welcome.
It's like Star Wars. We've got the last one coming up in December. So other than the trailer or whatever they release like that, I'm not really reading anything either. Of course, I get a bunch of stuff that says so-and-so might be in there. And that's the way it's written in the title.
The blank last might one? Be. Is that a threat or a promise?
The last one in the Skywalker.
Here. Oh, okay.
So
put that thing away.
There's a bunch of. I always get these articles. So and so drops spoiler that blank is coming back. I'm like, they're really trying hard to get you to click through, but.
Right. And I think the problem with a lot of these is that if you don't want to read the spoiler, that's great. Don't put the spoiler in the headline.
No. US Weekly, I'm telling you, or Entertainment Weekly. They're the worst.
But we're the best. So we're going to move
Chewbacca
on.
Chewbacca was a woman.
No, stop that. Just that has to do with this holiday special. We're not going to get into that. So
I tell you what, like Entertainment Weekly, I try to watch The Flash with Harrison when on live, because we just watch it together. And sometimes we have to watch it on the next day on the, stream.
Yeah.
And so, it never fails. Entertainment Weekly's like, hey, The Flash tripped over his shoelaces. I'm like, thanks for the stupid spoiler.
Read right the there. Details. You gave me the details.
I didn't even have to click through anything. It's in the title. I'm like,
kind of like movie trailers these days. I don't need to watch the movie.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, Clinton, well, what do we have next, another story to really talk about instead of...
We do. This is to really to talk about, and it's kind of speaking about movies and television at the same time, kind of tying all that together, because CBS creative chief David Nevins talks nurturing Star Trek with Viacom, also looking outside for streaming profits. CBS chief creative officer David Nevins said that the company, when it soon completes its $30 billion merger with Viacom, will both nurture longtime franchises like Star Trek and take advantage of the seller's market in streaming. Quote, we really believe it's not only servicing inside our own ecosystem, but serving people outside, Nevin said at the Bank of America's Merrill Lynch Communications and Entertainment Conference in LA. You all attend that one, I'm sure. Uh-huh. Star Trek is a legacy brand that a combined CBS Viacom will be able to fully exploit from all ad-supported TV to subscribing streaming services to films. Quote, what we're trying to do right now with Star Trek is build that brand, Nevin said. We want it to get younger and more relative to people, Nevin said. Viacom and CBS together can form a virtuous ecosystem, he added. If you're smart about it, you can create a lot of value. Now, I know that sounds extremely the old engulf and devour days, and it is. At the same time, however, it really is a strategy that Star Trek needs to embrace, and we see some of the things that are going on now with the new series doing that, and long before this guy was talking about it, that you always have to bring in, and I'm coining a phrase here, the next generation of Star Trek fans. You're not necessarily going to get the next generation of Star Trek fans by having Patrick Stewart. You are going to have the next generation of fans by having Sonequa Martin-Green and Wilson Cruz the crew that's on the ship with Picard to have younger people that other people can relate to. So I don't necessarily see it as, oh, they're just doing this for money. Well, but also for Star Trek itself to survive as an entity, to remain relevant, you have to work at it. And so I don't necessarily view this as a bad thing.
Let's be clear. They're not a non-for-profit company.
Exactly.
But so I get
sometimes
that part.
Sometimes they are. When some of the movies, sometimes they feel like they are, I'm sure. But
they're working towards non-for-profit. No profit. No, but yeah, I get that part. I'm not worried about that. And I'm fine with them changing it up a little bit, as long as it's, true to the message of the source material.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
All right. And now we just came back from Atlanta, but let's go back to Atlanta for Craig's next story.
Again. All right. So guess what?
What?
It looks like another story about Axanar. So Star Trek fan made film Axanar. I'm sorry, I'm getting some autoplay here. There we go. Eyes production in Atlanta this October. So Atlanta, they're calling for fans of the hit sci-fi series Star Trek, with an exclamation point inside the quotations. Okay.
I guess that's the name of it. Star Trek!
Star Trek! The source confirms with 11 Alive that the new installment of the independent Star Trek film Axanar will go into production in Atlanta October 4th through the 6th, which is just a couple days from here, and actually this week. So The 2014 Star Trek fan film Prelude to Axanar is considered by many the best fan film ever made, winning 46 film festival awards worldwide. Acclaimed by fans as the true heir to Star Trek legacy, Prelude to Axanar has more than 4 million views on YouTube. Now two additional Axanar episodes are in production and will shoot in Atlanta in October. In addition to the film, the actors will be recording the audiobook of the full 2-hour script. That's interesting. I didn't realize they were doing an audiobook.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, okay. That's an interesting way to get the story out, aside from that. So Axanar will tell the story of the Battle of Axanar, referenced in the original Star Trek series, but never fully realized on film. Well-known Star Trek actors J.G. Hertzler and Gary Graham will star in the episodes.
All right. So that begins. Now, that's not, we have no indication of when the thing will be released, but they are filming apparently later this week on the
series. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. They moved their studio to the Atlanta area, I think, mm-hmm. last year.
Cool.
Okay. So, yeah, to get her, I know that they raised money to make a feature length movie, but they were actually the catalyst for Paramount and CBS changing their story or their stance on fan films,
right?
Because they had some, they were paying, yeah, a pinch. There was a pay for, you can't pay employees or something like that, and somebody was taking money anyway. So I'm interested to see what they said. They're recording they're cutting a couple of episodes. Are these like two little 15-minute?
Right. I think they were allowed, and I think the rules just generally allow that you can have they have to be no longer than, I think, as you said, 15 minutes, but I believe you can have more than one. It might just be two. It's been a while since that ruling came down, so I've kind of forgotten something, but I think that, yeah, that all falls within the guidelines of what you're able to do.
Mm-hmm. And I know that Star Trek Continues, they got a little pass from Paramount because they had a couple episodes done and they were playing by the rules, which is cool. So, I doubt Axanar could file for a change, a waiver. Anyway.
All right. And our next story comes to us from the site Plagiarism Today.
That sounds plausible, doesn't it?
There's a site for everything. On Friday, a judge granted CBS and Netflix's motion to dismiss in the infamous Star Trek Discovery plagiarism lawsuit. The case was filed by Egyptian video game developer Anas Abdin, who alleged that CBS and others involved in the new series had infringed on his in-development video game Tardigrades. He originally outlined his allegations in an October 2018 blog post where he pointed to similarities between the two works, including similar characters, the use of tardigrades as a means of space travel, and more. His lawsuit had significant issues from the outset. Anyone with a modicum of knowledge about copyright or how such cases play out knew that the lawsuit was, at best, an extreme long shot. I included a video link as well to, it's a YouTuber who has been communicating with the developer here, and he points out some of the same issues going over what the ruling came down as, that the burden of proof on the developer to show that this clearly was taken from his work was a really, really high bar to meet, and just he couldn't do it. That things like the way the tardigrade interacted with the crew mm-hmm. was different. That some of the characters may look the same, but you can't copyright that. So mm-hmm. there was all these things. It really was going to be very hard for him to make this happen. But, and I think as the YouTuber said, I think this is true, that you at least, if you feel that that's the case, if you feel like they infringed upon you, you should bring it to court.
Right.
Because if you don't, you're going to regret it. You're just going to go, oh,
you'll never know.
Yeah. But I also think that he is correct that at a certain point, you have to cut your losses because it can get very expensive. You could try to appeal this, but now you're really talking some serious money and time and years that you can't devote your life to this.
And for what?
No. Yeah, I don't even know what the settlement would be for something like that. So
if you won.
So that at least we've got a decision on this, that this lawsuit is over. And we had talked about it before, so I want to make sure that at least this one we had a finale.
Good follow-up.
Two.
We missed our story about Worf.
We did. Oh, then we'll toss it back to you, Chuck, for a story that is a story and isn't a story once again, but this one is more of take it away.
We can talk about blank and blank are coming
but not
on
blank. Blank. No,
you're tossing and I'm catching. CBS has stated that the character Worf will not be appearing in season one of Star Trek Picard. Let me repeat that. Uh-huh. Worf will not be appearing in Picard. But can you trust that? Although TNG actors originally claimed they had not heard from the production, we later found out people like Jonathan Frakes, Marina Sirtis, Brent Spiner all have roles in the upcoming series. Amazing, yeah, isn't it?
Half of them are showing up there. Pretty much.
The latest speculation that Michael Dorn may indeed be reprising his role as Worf comes from an Instagram post. It shows a souvenir clapboard signed by the cast of Picard that was presented to the series cinematographer Philip Lanyon. Among the signatures, Michael Dorn.
Wah, wah, wah. I mean, I don't blame the cinematographer. It was a gift. But I feel like they're all just backpedaling to say, no, it means nothing. He was visiting the set,
Why would they do that? What's the motivation behind saying no, and then something turns up and goes, oh, yeah, I guess they are going to be on the show.
How can he not be on there at some level?
Well, we saw him on the cruise. He's a much thinner Michael Dorn than he was when he played
No, I mean, because Picard has such a interaction with Worf. I mean, he went and represented him on Klingon and, you know, had that, he was super connected with Worf, yeah. Just as he is with Data. So, I mean, how can he not be part of this show at some point?
Well, keep in mind, what he's doing is outside of the Federation, right? The story we seem to be getting is that whatever he's doing, he's not doing under Federation sanction. I think the fact that he runs into Riker, you know, and Troy is kind of how does even that happen?
Yeah.
Funny meeting you on this shuttle.
Yeah. you both going to Alpha Centauri? Yeah, that's great.
They share a shuttle together.
Yeah, exactly.
I was headed to Data's Comedy Club.
I also think that if the show gets a second season, which I think they said they'd committed to one, but it's been a while again on that. So it's a while since we've done a show, and you forget after a point. But you want to have some stuff for a second season, right?
Yeah.
So if you show everybody in the first season, look, it's that now in the second season, we got that guy that was in that one episode who was in the background and he was sweeping up some things. Yeah, he's
Guy.
In there now.
His name is Guy.
His name was Guy. He had a name.
I think you were talking about you were thinking of that article where they said they were already tapping Star Trek vets for season two. I don't know if it's not official, of course, but.
Right. Wasn't it Robert Picardo who said
that? That was one of them. Yeah. Which that'd be cool. I like Robert Picardo. I bumped into him on the cruise a little bit.
I was ran into him coming out of the gym.
I was going to say, did you actually bump into him and hurt him?
Not quite. It was funny. We were looking at that case with all the props and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was just following the counter. And I'm like, why are these tables here? and there's a guy in a chair. I looked over and it's like, oh, he's actually signing autographs. I'm bumping it to a chair. Sorry,
move
man.
Move along, take, Sonny. Move along.
He was nice.
Can't
about
take
it.
Him I said, anywhere.
Oh, excuse me. I said, I'm sorry. Yeah. Actually, well, Mary Chifo ran over my wife.
Yeah. So there you go. She had the most celebrity encounters of any of us, you know.
She puts herself out there because remember we were well. I know you guys remember at our live panel before we actually went up there. She went. She was there in the audience hanging out.
Mary Chifo, not your wife, right?
Yes. No. Yes. No, my wife. No.
Yes.
Yes. Mary Chifo was there with a couple other people just watching the panel. I was like, well, that's kind of cool.
Well, you know? If you recall the panel, it was a setup as well.
It was
a
setup. Huh? They were talking about the science of Star Trek, and when they said, well, I think we covered up everything, and then Mary Chifo spoke up. They said, oh, hi, Counselor Laurel, I didn't know you were there. And she did in character, not in costume, but she did in character. She says, what about Spore Drive? And they had to go into explanation. So she was. Yeah. They had a little conference before the panel began.
Well, that's fine. I mean, she was there. I thought it was kind of cool.
We could have asked her to been our panel and done something like that, but it wouldn't have been as funny.
No.
She could have said the same thing. I'd have been fine with that. What about the Spore Drive?
I'm for it. Next topic.
Yeah really? Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, counselor. Okay, let's move on. No. Now, we covered a lot of stories this time around because we've been gone for several weeks. However, there were a whole lot of additional stories we just couldn't get to. I didn't even try to count how many stories we didn't get to. However, if you go to the show notes for episode 51 over at thetopicistrek.com, you will find links to not only the stories we talked about this time around and a few that we didn't talk about when we talked about them, but all the stories we just didn't cover at all. And it just goes on and on and on, this list of things. So you've got plenty of Star Trek news to keep you occupied until next episode. But now we're going to close up Subspace Chatter. And we're going to head out on our main mission. This is where we take a Z-minus 10,000 meter deep dive into one subject and try to stay on course. And this time we thought we would take a few minutes to discuss Aaron Eisenberg as we say goodbye to the actor who brought the character Nog to life. And I'm going to turn things over to Craig, who will be leading our main mission.
Yeah. So just to start off things, you know, I recently did not watch the entire season of DS9 when it was first out. I saw bits and pieces. I had other things going on in life. So it just didn't jive with my, you know, watching time. But I went, about a year or so ago, I did a whole watch of the entire series. And one of the characters, now there's some good character arcs there. Worf was one of those that was really good. But Nog, he started off as one of those characters that I found a little slightly annoying. And then after time, okay, we're going to see him a good bit. And then he started to grow on me until towards the end. It's like, wow, he really turned his character around. And I have to give the writers credit for that, because that ended up being probably one of the better like I said story arcs or character arcs that I've seen probably ever, you know, because he went from being a little Ferengi looking for profit all the way, and here he is a captain, you know, and we've seen him a wartime hero and everything.
Kinda
and
like I Tony think that Stark.
And then Nog had the Infinity Stones, and he wielded them against Thanos. No, no. So, but I think you know, obviously the character is not just the writers, but it is the character, the guy that's playing it. And I think Aaron Eisenberg did a great job pulling that off, because you know he made him likable enough where you started to care about him. And then of course the other Ferengis too. You know, Ferengis were always had that kind of reputation from TNG. Well, they were a little different in TNG in some places, but than they were on DS9. But you know, they were kind of wormy, looking for profit, and anyway. So, but they ended up making it where we ended up liking all of them towards the end. Anyway, I think Nog was great. I really enjoyed a lot of the big beats that he had where you show his character really growing. How about you guys?
Well, what I found interesting was found out just recently that he was 23 when he started that show.
I was just going to say the same thing. He died at 50 in 2019. The show started, what, in 93? Yeah, 93 to 99 is when it ran. Which means he was, yeah, older than his character made out, because you see him with Jake Sisko and you think, oh, they're, what, 11, 12, 13-year-old boys. No, he had kind of that Michael J. Fox appearance.
And he was talking about the fact that a lot of his makeup early on, because he had a boyish face, they didn't use as much makeup on him as they did on the other Ferengi. And as they wanted the character to age, then they would apply more angular makeup on him, more prosthetics to age up his character.
Interesting. Pretty soon he starts looking like the Grand Nagus. He's got hair in his ears.
Well, hopefully not. Nobody wants the lobes for that.
No. But yeah. But one of the things that he has dealt with, which I'm sure a lot of people know, but I'll put it out here, was he was born with one kidney, and subsequently he's had two transplants over his lifetime to keep the system going. So I think for him to jump in and still pull this off and is kind of a testament, because you know, probably there were times when he wasn't feeling that good. I don't know how that works with one kidney, or if they're failing, or, you know, having to worry about rejection and all that kind of stuff.
Well, he said that what he decided he wanted to be an actor, that when he got a chance to be on the show, it's like every day, it's like, I can't believe I'm doing this, and I'm just going to, you know, make the most of it. So I think that really kind of came through. And I think that's a lot of where Nog's character came from,
his excitement,
his enthusiasm about things. Yeah. And, you know, it's possible that sometimes it was misdirected, both he and the character, because as you know, if you're writing on a television show, after a certain point, the writers get to see what the actor is doing and they get a chance to talk to the actors.
Get
and
to
then
know
suddenly,
a little bit.
Right. Mm-hmm. The character starts becoming more like the actor. The actor is more comfortable doing the character, and suddenly the character is doing things. I've heard this on several occasions where a character will have something to do, or their storyline will take an arc in a certain direction because the writers know that's what has happened to the person and they found it interesting. And it's really good for the actor because I've got something to pull from in this case, because I know exactly what that is.
That's right.
And apparently, as Aaron saw it, that this shift of Nog's character to want to desperately be in Starfleet was a parallel to his desperately wanting to be an actor.
Cool.
And he not mind it, you know, not caring what it took that he was going to make this happen.
Good thing he didn't get cast as a Vulcan or something. All that excitement would have been pent up.
Yeah.
Just wait till he hits Ponvar.
That's the most excited Vulcan I've ever seen.
Great. Once every 7 years, he gets excited. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Actually, part of what you're talking about, you can go see in the What We Left Behind. They posted a tribute to him. I guess it was some unused interview or part of the interview that's in the documentary.
I don't recall seeing this particular clip in the documentary.
I think it was extra. But if you go watch that, you can really tell that he had an emotional connection to this whole thing. Not just the show itself, but the fans and everything as well. And it's really touching. Actually, it kind of got to me. I'm watching. I know he's not with us anymore, and I'm watching that. And I'm like, oh man, you know, his excitement was palpable.
And I know that the writers were really invested in the character as well. This is going to sound bad, perhaps, but stick with me, because In the documentary, they do a theoretical next season of Deep Space Nine, and it starts off with Nog, and I believe he's on the Defiant. And boy, more research required. But anyway, he's on a ship coming through the wormhole, being chased, and his ship is destroyed. And so you could tell that we need something really emotional to happen here to start this off. Now, when Aaron heard about it, he wasn't particularly thrilled. He said, "What? You were going to kill off my character? That's great."
Yeah.
But you can see that what can we do that will be like this gut punch?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that they said he is so likable. That's the gut punch, right? To have that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of things related to this, that a group of Star Trek fans have started a petition, whether or not it will go anyplace, I don't know, but for Captain Nog to have a memorial someplace within the Picard series. So I'm assuming just to digitally put in someplace a statue of Captain Nog or something that commemorates him.
Well, that would be nice.
So I don't know if we will have a link in the show notes to the article, to the petition, and you can read over that and decide whether or not you want to sign that. And, you know, obviously that's up to the discretion of the production, what they want to and not want to do, what's feasible and not feasible to do. But it is something that people are thinking about. The other thing I wanted to mention was the fundraiser for Melissa Longo, who was Aaron's widow. This was originally set up to help fund the memorial service. There was some issues that there were concerns about tax implications, so they pulled the fund for a bit, and it's gone back up online. So we will have a link to that as well in the show notes.
Nice.
All right. Is there any parting words
that we'd like to say? I'm just bummed we didn't get a chance to meet him, you know, with the opportunities that we've had.
Yeah. Yeah. He was at Star Trek Las Vegas, I believe, this past year.
What I thought was cool, one thing I did like, and Armin Sherman and Max Grodinchek, they would all appear in their makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And do stuff like at the Star Trek convention or other places they would appear, and they would actually do makeup and do pictures and stuff, which I thought was kind of neat. Because
on the next Star Trek cruise, Craig, do not walk up to Max and say, "I'm sorry for the loss of your son."
No, I would not do that. Too soon, man. I wouldn't do that.
I'm just warning you.
I would not do that. What? Come on, man.
I feel like Chuck would. Anyway, let's
kick Chuck in the shin.
The idea had to come from somewhere.
That's right. All right. Well, it's time to come back from our main mission then. It seems so anticlimactic. Can we have some more buttons, please? No, that's not a button. That's not a button.
I pushed a button.
There you go. Oh, push all the buttons. There we go. And time for a Warp Speed Roundtable. And this time around, because we were just speaking about Aaron, what I'm going to ask everyone is, what single scene do you think encapsulates Nog's spirit? And I'm going to start off, give you guys a minute to think about this. And I would say, I'm going to go for the easy answer. So if it's your answer as well, that's okay. To me, the most obvious choice is his, I would call it almost pleading with Sisko to sign his recommendation, his sponsorship to go into Starfleet Academy. That really talked about the character an awful lot. I thought it was a well done scene. I thought he pulled it off really well. And it showed this shift, this maturing of the character that said, this is where I've been, this is who I was, and this is who I am now, and this is who I want to be. And I thought it was a really great scene that just kind of, in a nutshell, was this is Nog. So let me move on to who would like to go next?
Go ahead, Chuck.
I'm struggling with this because I remember a lot of the earlier scenes, but I don't remember stuff in the later seasons. So I feel pretty bad that I need to go back and do a refresher. But he certainly had memorable moments. The fact that I remembered a lot of the early scenes, like when Keiko was setting up the school, he was sort of forced to sit there, but he wasn't allowed to sit next to Jake. And the mischief they got into. I think the mischievous moments were, I don't know that it really embodies Aaron's Nog's spirit, but it certainly was a paving way. So when he got to points, like you said, where he said, I'm going to be a Starfleet officer, he kind of looked and went, really? This scrappy kid that gets into trouble? All right, prove it. So I need to go back and refresh some of the later scenes because I'm sort of biased towards the earlier ones, but it's not really hitting the question you asked, and I apologize for that.
That's okay. That's okay. I certainly encourage a rewatch, so no problem there at all.
Oh, sure.
And what about you, Craig?
Well, I kind of got two, and I'm going to pick something other than the Cisco conversation, because that I thought that was a pretty strong scene. I really love that scene. I've actually just watched it a couple times. Outside of this news, you know, I've watched it a few times. I really like that, where Cisco's really trying to get it out of him. What do you really want? But I also, one of my favorite scenes, and it shows his spirit, is he was wanting something more than what he was. He didn't, you know, obviously he told Cisco that, but he wanted something more than where he was at. And that's when him and Vic were trying to build the casino.
Yeah.
And and he was really gung ho for it. He was all excited about it. And Vic was the one talking him out of it. But I liked that whole scene and the whole holodeck thing, the whole episode where he's kind of living in the holodeck. You know, Vic was he up for months, right? I forget how long he was actually running, and Nog would go in there and converse with him. And that's when Vic was telling him, you need to get out of here and cancel him. Anyway, you could see Nog was excited about it because he was thinking he was trying to be something he wasn't supposed to be. Anyway, and the other thing, and this is, take this for what it's worth, it's a little bit of a scene, not even from the show, but I think it's from the comic book or something. I get a little clear on this, but it's where Nog beat the Kobayashi Maru.
What?
You didn't know that?
I did not know that.
He cheated.
Okay. No, he did not.
He used the Kirk cheat book.
No. So the second, he actually beat it twice. One of them, I think, there was a auto-destruct thing. Let's see, the auto-destruct, the ship's computer announced that the lowest setting Nog and his crew had been able to manage when they, he used his ears. He had realized that something was different, and he was able to, you know, realize it and react. I got to read closer on that one. But the other one, instead of Klingons, they were Romulans. And say the second victory appears in the story Best Tools Available, which appears in Strange New Worlds 4. And it says, say Nog makes the Romulan crew an offer. So the Fringi, the Romulan officer demanded, you're in violation of intergalactic treaties and we are perfectly within our rights to destroy you. And he says, name your price, Nog demanded. The crew looked at him stunned in silence. Surely he did not say what they thought he just said. He argued with the simulated Romulan for a while, and then the transmission appeared to begin to breaking up, and then the simulator halted entirely. Nog broke the Kobayashi Maru by trying to deal with it in a way that wasn't programmed to handle. So I read that the other day, and I thought that was really cool.
I'm not programmed to respond in that area. Yes.
So sometimes the Ferengi's negotiating skills actually help out.
And of course, there was the time that Captain Nog saved Bosworth Carmichael Pennington and his crew of the USS Literally.
What a moment.
Yeah.
So there was that too.
Oh, I did like it when he was making the the trades, and he ended up trading off Cisco's desk, and they were trying to get everything back. It's
but the self-sealing stem bolts to get rid of those things.
That's right. Yeah, that was just awesome.
All right, and you may have you, the listener, may have a moment that you think encapsulates the Nog spirit. Let us know. You can leave a note over on our Facebook page or at facebook.com/thetopicistrek, and we will be happy to hear what your thoughts are on this and what your remembrances are of both Aaron and of Nog. All right, but now it's time to end the show this time around. It's time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, at comedyforecast.com, all one word with the number 4. You can find me on Twitter, Comedy Forecast. You can find me on Facebook, Comedy Forecast, MeWe, Comedy Forecast, Instagram, Comedy Forecast, some street, random street corner, Comedy Forecast, whatever. And
a lot of domains there, Clinton.
Yeah, I know. And what about you guys?
You can find us over at chuckchat.com/Technorama for our Technorama podcast, or just search for Technorama podcast on your favorite search engine. I'm sure it'll come up with something more funny than what we've got.
Yeah, we'll come up with something. All right.
All right. Time to hit the theme. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't
put on
the red shirt.
Red shirt.
Sure, exclamation point.
It was so much better in person.
Was it?
Not really, no.